This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. Michael Ray Anderson grew up in poverty in Fayetteville in the 1980s. His family struggled to make ends meet. His father was an abusive alcoholic, and when he saw his friends driving new cars and flashing wads of cash, Mike realized that selling drugs could be his way out. By the time his parents divorced when he was 14, Mike was selling cocaine and guns. Just a few years later, a fight over drugs resulted in a shooting. Mike was charged with first-degree murder. He was facing a death penalty, and he took a plea for a life sentence. After serving 17 years, Mike was paroled and vowed to turn his life around. His story is the subject of the film A Polished Soul, which screens at the National Black Theater Festival tomorrow in Winston-Salem. That's at 11 o'clock, but Mike is back with us on The State of Things right now. Welcome back, Mike.
Thank you so much for having me, Frank.
This film and the book around it is your story. Talk about your childhood growing up in Fayetteville.
Well, growing up in Fayetteville, my father was an African-American Vietnam vet that was PTSD diagnosed but never treated for it when he came back from war. And so a lot of the trauma itself would trigger reactions that became alcohol abusive as well as domestic violence plagued household. He would beat my mother a lot and also beat his kids. And at one point we were even held at gunpoint by my father, and then we had to make way into a domestic violence shelter. So a lot of that was very traumatizing to myself and my brothers. And some of the decisions that I ended up making later on in my life resulted into something that came from bitterness and resentment.
Yeah, some of that those decisions also had to do with what you were seeing around you. I mean, talk about what you saw and the people who were making money and looked like they were living a good life.
Yeah, I had a few friends. As a teenager, you know, when you encounter one of your friends that pulls out a wad of money, $3,000 or $4,000, that's unheard of. And, you know, you want to say, how can I get that money? As well, you know, my mother and father divorced, so it made things a little harder. My mother was working double shifts at the hospital for minimum wage, $3.85 at that time. So she couldn't really do anything with the household. And, you know, the community couldn't see it. And there was a lot of things that I felt like they didn't need to see. So I went into that life and to a certain extent began trying to provide things for my brother and myself.
It was working out for a while. Then there was a fight and a shooting. Tell us about that day.
Well, this was years later. You know, I kind of like stayed in and out of the streets as a teenager, dabbled with it. But later on in life, as after I graduated from high school, I actually had the first murder charge I got incarcerated for, a $25,000 bond. I was at a party. I got released on bond and then turned around 7 months later. This incident happened in the neighborhood over drugs. So I got locked right back up for murder. So I was facing the death penalty plus life plus 60. But there was an incident to where, you know, there was a little minor altercation over some drugs that escalated into a shootout. You know, my best friend's life, Larry, as well as myself, we were endangered. And there was just so many reactions that became of this, and I had to react the way that I felt like was necessary and pretty much protect my life and my best friend's life.
You were facing a death penalty. You took a plea. Tell us about that.
Yes, I was in the Cumberland County Jail. I waited for 3 years waiting for trial, and so I finally decided to take a plea bargain to relieve the case and to just go in and do what I needed to do. I didn't know if I was ever going to come home. I was told that I wouldn't because my case was so high profile and severe, so when I got into that situation, I said, I'm still going to make my mind up to equip myself and become a better person. So I went in and got college degrees, computer systems technology, business administration, several vocational trades. I served that 17 years and became a model inmate. And the parole board said, there's something about you. We have to let you go.
What, did you make that decision right away or did that take time?
It took time. It took time. And the reason why it took time was because of the simple fact that I was still young and immature when I went in. So as a youth that's immature and you're pretty much influenced by the streets from whence you came, it's hard for you to say, hey, I'm in prison and I'm going to be the upstanding guy.
Well, because the same stuff that's going on in the streets is happening. The same hustles, the same scams, it's all happening in prison. Right?
Intensified, because it's like one big microcosm. You know, it's a smaller universe within a universe, and you see it more so because it's survival of the fittest.
But you did. So talk about the evolution and the mentors also that you met along the way that helped turn you around a little bit.
There was one occasional counselor, Miss King. She's actually in the autobiography, if you get a chance to read it, A Polished Soul. But she was one person that said, she's like, Mr. Anderson, there's something about you. I have to tell you now that you need to take every educational opportunity that you can. She laid it out for me, and I said, you know what? Let's put a 7-year plan together, and then we put a 7-year plan together. Then there was another guy on the prison yard called Old Coon that came up to me, you know, older white guy. And I knew he wasn't trying to try me because he wasn't in a physical state to actually try to try me. But he came and told me a few things, and he said he felt like he saw me shining on the yard, and he felt like that I needed to be in a position to where one day I will be released. He heard that I had a life sentence, but he was like, you're not going to be in here for life.
You must have heard that. But maybe you didn't, but weren't there teachers? Were there other people who were telling you that along the way that, you know, Mike, you're special, Mike, you can, you know, turn yourself around?
Well, not prior to incarceration, but maybe during incarceration. And then when I encountered those teachers as I was going through my academic journey, there were some that actually told me, there's like, you know, you're getting 98s and 100s on all your tests as you're getting your degrees. Where did this brilliance come from? And was it there when you got in your situation? Because if it was, I don't see why you're here.
Yeah. But you did all the work, and you went for those degrees, and you did get out after 17 years.
Yes. The North Carolina Parole Board saw fit to release me on what you call a MAP program, Mutual Agreement Parole Plan. And this was at 15 years when they decided to give it to me. They said, if you go through this program for 2 years without getting in trouble, work release, community visit release, we'll bring you out on passes. If you can make it through this program, we will release you in 2 years. And then they did. They released me on Mother's Day in 2008.
That could have been the start of something great, but you went back to the same street. So once again, you had some more struggles on the outside as well, right?
Yeah, well, I actually didn't go back to the streets. What I did was I went back to the streets to visit people and to influence them and inspire them. And that's what a Polished Souls Foundation was formed out of, because I saw there was a higher percentage of at-risk youth and adjudicated youth versus when I went in and said, I said, something needs to be done, and I want to use my life story and make myself transparent and make sure that these youth see that these rap songs that's promoting all of this is not where it's at. Let me tell you the real side of this story. Let me tell you what happens when you really do this stuff, not have one verse about selling 2 keys of cocaine and then killing 2 people, then turn around after you release this song, you get no charges. Let me tell you what really happens when you do this, what you hear in this rap music.
I can see that you'd be inspired to do that, but when you got out and saw that people were making that same kind of money that sent you up, you were having a hard time finding a job. Was it tempting to you?
It was. I was approached by several people that felt that I was more intelligent than I was when I went in, felt like I'd be very resourceful to their operations, and become somebody that was part of a so-called greater operation with greater money involved. And I told myself, I said, you know, it's not worth it, because there's this saying that we have in our culture that the game is not the same anymore. And it's definitely not the same, but it's something that I didn't feel like I want to expend myself towards. And so the thing about it is that if you look back upon it all, what got you there in the beginning? It was those choices. Do I need to make those choices again, thinking that I'm smarter and I can make them better? No. It's not the smarter choice to make.
You had a hard time getting a job, but you did get a job with an old college friend at Dames,
actually,
right?
High school friend. Yeah, Damian Moore. Actually, we started working at what we call Blue Mountain Catering. Right. It was struggling at that time, but it was still heartfelt. Everybody felt like it was home, but then before you know it, it transformed into Dames Chicken and Waffles. And, hey, y'all know the story about that place.
It is big. A couple of stories now. I got one in Greensboro as well.
Definitely.
So now tell us what you're doing. Tell us about A Polished Soul.
A Polished Soul, I'm now an independent contractor on the speaking circuit. I have my nonprofit organization that does gang intervention and definitely mentors adjudicated youth. I'm a filmmaker now. I'm also a 3-time published author. As I said earlier, the autobiography was released last September. The documentary had premiered yesterday, but we'll screen again tomorrow at the National Black Theater Film Festival at 11 a.m. And this story in of itself, what I thought about was the youth nowadays. A lot of them are not going to pick up that book and read it. And believe it or not, our public school system has failed a lot of our youth to be able to have the ability to pick that book up and read it. Mm-hmm. So now we're raising YouTube children. And I told myself, what can we do to make this thing? It was originally a project that I was working on with DDC International for another story. But then we said, let's make this an individual project. What can we do to make the message to be put into a 15-minute composition? The message can be heard, but we won't lose their attention.
Do you think about what would have happened if someone like you had approached you at the age of 13 or 12 with that same message, whether or not you would have taken them seriously? I mean, that has to be on your mind. The 13-year-old kid, a 12-year-old kid looking at all the money and seeing that guy come down and say, yeah, I've heard that before.
That's what would have inspired me. If I would have gotten that same message at that age, I know that I would have went in a different direction. I know there was something, you know, we didn't have that. That older era, that older generation back then, it was about, hey, get it. Go get it. Go get your money. Go out there and do what you need to do. Nowadays, I feel like if the messenger brings the message to you and is relevant to your lifestyle and it can compel you to listen because it's not fictitious. Right. It's not something that is put to you in, like I said, in a song to glorify it. If I can show you, hey, here are the results of those same lyrics that you hear. Let me show this to you. Then I feel there, you know, if I could just reach one person, that person can spread the message to other people.
Your film screened yesterday and will again tomorrow at the National Black Theater Festival in Winston. Tell us about that. How did the screening go and how important is it to screen at that festival?
Wow, Frank, is very important. It's definitely an honor that I was given the opportunity to screen at that film festival. It evoked so many emotions. Yeah. There were so many people that walked out of there and just pulled me to the side. They were crying, hugging me. The story just impacted everybody that attended the screening, and it actually birthed multiple opportunities out of that for different states. You know, there's a lot of people that want to invite me to different churches and different organizations to speak. But the screening was awesome, and it really, really, really hit the nail on the head because everybody is suffering from some type of at-risk youth in their family.
Mike Anderson is featured in the film that he produced called A Polished Soul. It screens tomorrow at the National Black Theater Festival, and we at 11 o'clock. We get more details at our website, stateofthings.org. Mike, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me, Frank.
Just ahead, we're going to take a look at pop culture and social media on a new series on the State of Things called Culture 360. Stay with us on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill.